Welcome to a reading of the Worcester Business Journal. It is Wednesday, 11 a.m. This program is intended for a print impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Today, we will be reading from the latest edition. This program is brought to you in part by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind. This is Joanne with Mary reading to you live from the Patricia A. Fletcher Studio at Audio Journal in Worcester, Massachusetts. And now I will hand it over to Mary.
And good morning. My first article is $10 million in scholarships earmarked for UMass Chan family medical students. Governor Mara Healey signed off on Friday for a $10 million pilot scholarship program providing additional aid to students at UMass Chan Medical School in Worcester who commit to studying and practicing family medicine in Massachusetts. The initiative is intended to help offset shrinking primary care provider options across the state. In addition to committing to family medicine, students who receive scholarships from the fund will be asked to commit to working for 5 years in a community health center with underserved populations, or else a health care network that meets a certain threshold of public payers. The scholarship program, which will prioritize students with financial need, is slated to go into effect as soon as this fall. Details around administration are currently in the works, said Dr. Ann Larkin, professor of surgery and vice provost and senior associate dean for educational affairs at UMass Chan Medical School. We are doing it very quickly, Dr. Larkin said. Although Massachusetts is known for its top-tier medical facilities, finding a primary care doctor that is accepting new patients or who will stay with the practice they work at has become increasingly difficult. The 2025 Massachusetts Health Insurance Survey, put out by the Center for Health Information and Analysis, reported that 27.6% of surveyed residents said they had difficulty getting appointments with a doctor's office or clinic as soon as they felt appointment was needed. Some 17% of respondents said the doctor's office was not accepting new patients. In tandem with these figures, CHIA's 2025 Massachusetts Healthcare and Human Services Workforce Survey found that physicians to have the highest vacancy rate in community health centers, coming in at 11%, and the highest turnover rate among full-time employees in acute care hospitals at 12%. The scholarship program aims to address a twofold challenge to training and recruiting primary care family medicine doctors. One of the challenges is the anticipated debt-to-income ratio for would-be family doctors. Medical students can expect to graduate with more than $200,000 in debt, according to data from the Association of American Medical Colleges. On top of that debt, family medicine practitioners don't generally make as much as their peers in other specialties. By alleviating the educational financial burden, UMass Chan leadership is hopeful that students will be more willing to follow through with family medicine. A lot of students come in thinking that they want one specialty and then they change their mind, Dr. Larkin said. Because of this, Dr. Larkin said, there are plans to implement mentors and other support mechanisms to help keep family medicine students on track with their intended discipline. About 4% of the most recent UMass Chan Medical School class entered family medicine residencies, Dr. Larkin said. Her goal is to increase that figure up to 15 to 20%. Dr. Diane McKee, professor and chair of the school's Family Medicine and Community Health, said advocacy for family medicine support has been going on at the state level for several years, including by the Massachusetts Academy of Family Physicians, a statewide professional association. This educational effort, she said, laid the groundwork for the $10 million proposal, which was drafted and introduced by Senate Ways and Means Chair Michael Rodriguez. Broadly speaking, we know that there is a crisis in Massachusetts right now, Dr. McGee said. The state is currently losing primary care providers faster than they are gaining them, she said. It's a problem she expects to get much worse as more doctors approach retirement. There are several kinds of medical providers who provide primary medical care, including general internists, pediatricians, and family physicians, among others. But family medicine is the most likely specialty to actually result in a clinician who is going to practice primary care, Dr. McGee said. Pediatricians and internists often choose to subspecialize. Moreover, family medicine practitioners focus their training across the age spectrum and are able to ideally treat entire families. They also tend to take a biopsychosocial approach, which means integrating medical, sociological, and psychological factors into their care. This scholarship, she hopes, will make UMass Chan into a destination for aspiring family medicine doctors. That will only serve to help community health providers across the state, not just in Worcester County. I think we'll have more students coming in with this interest, Dr. McGee said. The initial $10 million fund is part of a pilot program that is set to run through 2033. Next, I have a few more of the 2026 Power 100. First up is Roberta Bryan. Some of Worcester's most significant development opportunities begin long before a building is constructed. For the last 8 years, Bryan has spearheaded efforts to acquire, clean up, and prepare 51 acres of former industrial land for redevelopment. Since 2025, she has overseen more than $20 million in contracts, administered over $18 million in grants, and completed remediation of key parcels at Green Tech Park, one of the most ambitious economic development projects in Worcester. The project redeveloping portions of the former St. Gobain property is expected to support 1,000 jobs and create one of the nation's premier advanced manufacturing campuses. She was asked, what unique skills sets you apart from others? She answered, I ask a lot of questions. Learning about businesses and development goals helps create better outcomes. What is one habit powerful leaders should practice every day? She answered, perspective. It helps leaders see the big picture, appreciate progress, remain flexible, and better manage the challenges that come. Finally, why do you do business in Central Mass? Central Massachusetts deserves an organization willing to take on difficult projects that create opportunities. Next on the list is David Greeney. Few projects have the potential to reshape downtown Worcester as dramatically as the conversion of the former Fallon Health headquarters into housing. Through Synergy's acquisition of 1 Chestnut Street, Greeney is spearheading what is expected to be the largest office-to-residential conversion in Massachusetts, bringing hundreds of mixed-income apartments to the city center. The project builds on his firm's growing Worcester presence, which includes investments in 446 Main Street and efforts to attract new retail, restaurant, and events downtown. He was asked what unique skills sets you apart from others. He replied, "I am a calculated risk taker, and I have been since arriving in the U.S. from Ireland 30 years ago with little more than a vision, discipline, and hard work." What is the one habit powerful leaders should practice every day? Invest in your relationships and keep those connections current. Leadership is a network of trust built one conversation at a time. And finally, why do you do business in Central Mass? Worcester is a city with strong fundamentals, talented people, and tremendous momentum. We are proud to invest in its future. Next in the 2026 Power 100 is Steve Goodman. Goodman's GFI partners already play a key role in Central Massachusetts' commercial real estate industry. But two new development projects in the region will see it play a bigger role in tackling the region's persistent housing shortage. With more than 10 million square feet in its portfolio already based in Central Massachusetts, GFI Partners will grow its presence with a 197-unit apartment being planned for Worcester's Canal District, taking over a key development near Polar Park. It's expanding in North Central Massachusetts as well, partnering with Fitchburg State University to construct housing at the site of a former theater in downtown Fitchburg. These new projects build upon GFI's already broad presence in the region. The company has built more than 1 million square feet of space in Devens for companies including metal manufacturer SMC Corporation and life science tool firm Aventor Services. It's constructing a 1.2 million square foot distribution facility in Charlton, which is expected to come online in 2027. An MIT graduate, Goodman has completed $4 billion in commercial real estate transactions since founding GFI in 1997. Next in the 2026 Power 100 list are three men, Jim, Nick, and Mel Ciccone. Few families have invested more consistently in Worcester real estate than the Ciccones. For decades, Jim has pursued projects others overlooked, while Nick and Mel help carry their approach into the future. Since 2025, the family has completed a $6 million, 40,000 square foot manufacturing facility in Sturbridge, a $9 million, 50,000 square foot industrial building in Worcester, and acquired 20 Washington Square for potential development. Their willingness to invest in underutilized properties has made them one of the most influential development families in Central Massachusetts. When asked, what is one habit powerful leaders practice every day? Jim believed it is conviction. He has passionately believed in Worcester for more than four decades and pursues projects others don't believe in. And how do they unwind? Jim and Nick are car enthusiasts, and Mel is an avid golfer. And now we will take our first break.
Did you know ADA paratransit riders in Worcester, Auburn, Boylston, Leicester, Northborough, Oxford, Westborough, and West Boylston now have the option to schedule trips through the Worcester Regional Transit Authority's new online reservation system. Call customer service at 508-791-9782 or email paratransit at therta.com to begin scheduling your trip online.
Welcome back to the reading of the Worcester Business Journal. It is 11:15 a.m. This is a production of Audio Journal. Bose acquires Austrian audio engineering firm, looking for a way to broaden its reach across third-party devices. Framingham-based Bose Corp has acquired an Austrian firm focused on audio and smart home technologies. The acquisition of Vienna-based Stream Unlimited Engineering GmbH gives Bose's audio technology division a pathway to embed its technology into a wide variety of smart home devices and other consumer devices. Stream Unlimited's more than 120 employees have helped the firm deliver more than 2,000 projects to clients since its founding in 2005, according to the company. The company helps other brands build internet-connected speakers, soundbars, and smart home devices. Stream Unlimited has a proven track record of creating connected ecosystems across devices, said Nick Smith, president of Bose Audio Technology and chief strategy officer. Bose already has its Sound by Bose and Bose Waveform audio engine offerings, which allow its technology to be licensed and used outside of its own products, including in headsets and motorcycle helmets. The purchase price was not disclosed. Bose was founded in 1964 in Natick before moving its headquarters to Framingham in 1972, according to the Music Museum of New England. The company has about 15,000 employees in central Massachusetts and more than 6,000 worldwide, according to the information provided by the WBJ Research Department. Next article, DOER Commissioner. Energy codes, load management critical for affordability, grid stability. Load management is a key aspect of addressing energy affordability, grid reliability, and climate goals with passive management tools like stricter energy building codes playing a major part, Department of Energy Resources Commissioner Elizabeth Mahoney said. Speaking at LBJ's Mass Energy Summit at College of Holy Cross, Mahoney said the construction space is moving towards embracing more energy-efficient buildings driven by long-term savings amid rising energy cost. Passive house standards are part of the state's specialized stretch codes, the most stringent of three energy codes available to Massachusetts municipalities. I think it's very important for reducing costs for our electricity over time, Mahoney said of the specialized stretch energy code. 83% of all commercial multi-unit housing being proposed in Massachusetts right now is meeting passive house standards. That's even with only 60 communities adopting the specialized stretch code. Worcester opt into the specialized stretch code in September 2023. The Worcester City Council considered pausing enforcement of the specialized stretch code in April, citing pushback from developers, but later suspended those efforts after the city determined state law did not allow for such a pause. Highlighting ways businesses can reduce energy cost, Mahoney says the state's Mass Save Energy Efficiency Program has resulted in $43 billion in total benefits since 2010, including $22 billion in electric system savings alone. Mahoney also highlighted Connected Solutions, a national grid initiative aimed at reducing electricity use during periods of high energy demand. Using smart meters and other devices, homeowners and businesses can receive compensation for reducing consumption during peak events. Our analysis shows that we have the ability to shave peak consumption by 4.5 gigawatts by 2030 and 14 gigawatts by 2050, Mahoney said. That's going to save customers billions of dollars. Speaking during a panel discussion, David Flanagan, Deputy Executive Vice Chancellor for Facilities Management at UMass Chan Medical School in Worcester, highlighted how the large medical campus addresses its energy needs. The campus operates a cogeneration plant, allowing it to produce its own electricity, chilled water, and steam from natural gas and electricity inputs. This allows the school to export power to the grid to relieve stress at moments of high demand. Flanagan said UMass Chan models energy input needs using multi-year historical data overlaid with climate projections, locking in supply purchases when commodity pricing is historically low. We continuously monitor the pricing of various commodities across a 7 to 10 year period, and we hedge the buys we see value in the marketplace, he said. For smaller businesses, panelists said the first step in addressing energy's cost is to call the utility company. Josh Kessler, principal of the specialist programs at National Grid, said National Grid will assign an account rep to large customers and send a vetted third-party vendor out for a site assessment for small businesses at no cost. Joanne Bentley, an associate vice president of administration and facilities at Bristol Community College in Fall River, highlighted the success she has had using incentives and programs, saying the college had received about $1.3 million in rebates and incentives in the last 18 months. If I could clip coupons and use them, I would, but I can't do that, Bentley said. So I leverage what I can, and that's working with my utility company. I'd literally send an email whenever I'm doing a project. Scott Noyes, Business Development Energy Services at Milton Catt, estimated that only 10% of businesses can be called truly proficient in how they use and manage energy. If you start dialing in on how those rates move around and what that means, it draws a direct line to the P&L of your business, Noyes said. Next article, Yotco owners buy new Clinton retail sites for $6.5 million. The owners of Marlboro-based Yotco Energy have purchased three newly developed retail sites in Clinton, including a gas station, a Starbucks, and a Wendy's for $6.5 million. Tarek and Gardia Yatim, the husband and wife owners of Yotco Energy, purchased the three parcels at 830, 860, and 870 Main Street in a deal finalized according to the Worcester District Registry of Deeds records. Yotco Energy operates 19 gas stations and convenience stores across Massachusetts, Connecticut, Rhode Island, according to their website. The site at 830 to 870 Main Street was formerly a disused warehouse before it was redeveloped into retail properties by Needham-based Waterstone Properties Group, which purchased the site for $1.5 million in March 2028. Yotco's purchase did not include two lots with new buildings housing Valvoline and Chase Bank locations. Now we will continue with the Power 100 people. David Brunel. When the University of Massachusetts needed to find the successor for Dr. Michael Collins after his historic 19-year tenure leading UMass Chan Medical School in Worcester, leadership relied on one man to head the search committee, David Brunel. Although often behind the scenes, Brunel has been an influential figure in the central Massachusetts business community for nearly all this century. When Worcester-based Commerce Bank was acquired by Boston-based Berkshire Hills Bancorp for $209 million in 2017, Brunel was one of the two Commerce Board members to transition to the Berkshire Board. He then became Berkshire Chair in 2021 and remains in that role today, including after Berkshire Hills' merger with Brookline Bancorp and the creation of Beacon Financial Corp and Beacon Bank. In the community, he is chair of the nonprofit Worcester City Campus Corps and serves on the UMass Board of Trustees. As head of the UMass Chancellor Search, Brunel led a 20-member committee that included two former lieutenant governors, the UMass Amherst Chancellor, and a Nobel laureate. Their work resulted in the selection of Dr. David McManus, who is taking over as Chancellor on July 1st. Another Power 100, Eric Torkenu. Torkenu's influence extends well beyond commercial banking. While helping businesses secure capital and advance growth plans through Fidelity Bank, he has become one of Worcester's most active civic leaders. An immigrant from Ghana, he was the first African-American to chair both the Worcester Club and the Worcester Regional Research Bureau, and serves on numerous boards such as the Greater Worcester Community Foundation and the Worcester Regional Chamber of Commerce, helping shape the region's business, nonprofit, and community development landscape. What unique skills set you apart? Ability to connect people, capital, and ideas across business, civic, and community circles while staying grounded and approachable. What is one habit powerful leaders should practice every day? Powerful leaders should practice intentional listening and servitude every day, creating lasting influence beyond titles and authority. Why do you do business in Central Mass? Worcester gave me opportunity, and by investing in its businesses, institutions, and people, we strengthen the region for future generations. How do you unwind? Meditate. Another Power 100. Mary Dean. Dean made history in 2025 when she became the first female president and CEO in Clinton Savings Bank's 175-year history. Since taking the role, she has strengthened the bank's leadership team, expanded its presence in the community through board service, and implemented strategic planning initiatives aimed at long-term growth. She has raised her and the bank's visibility by joining boards of Community Foundation of North Central Mass, the Worcester Business Development Corp, and the Icon Music and Study Center. What unique skills set you apart from others? My ability to sing. I have been a cantor at church for more than 40 years. What is one habit powerful leaders should practice every day? Empathy. Understanding the perspectives of colleagues and customers creates stronger relationships and a positive culture. Why do you do business in Central Mass? Clinton Savings Bank was founded in Clinton in 1851, and Central Massachusetts has remained our home ever since. How do you unwind? I unwind by taking my dog on walks and escaping into good books. And one more before we take a break. Dana Nish. With $3.9 billion in local deposits, Nish leads the largest bank headquartered in Central Massachusetts. Since 2025, Middlesex Savings Bank has more than doubled its year-over-year net income while expanding net interest margin, strengthening capital ratios, and growing its mortgage portfolio. Niche's current focus is enhancing the bank's cash management and treasury capabilities to better serve business customers through the region. What unique skills set you apart from others? I'm known for thoroughly evaluating complex issues from multiple perspectives and identifying balanced solutions that align diverse stakeholder interests. What is one habit powerful leaders should practice every day? Listen to those you work with and recognize that the best learning often comes from coworkers and partners. Why do you do business in Central Mass? Central Massachusetts combines entrepreneurial spirit, strong community connections, and access to key regional markets. And now it's time for another break.
Bay State Council of the Blind is an organization created by and for people with vision loss. we seek to improve the lives of people who are blind and those who have low vision in Massachusetts. We work on accessibility, advocacy, and all walks of life, transportation, voting, employment, education, health, and the arts. We enjoy getting together to socialize and to support each other. Our Central Mass chapter meets in Worcester every other month on the third Saturday at 10 a.m. in person and on Zoom. We are currently meeting at the offices of Audio Journal at 799 West Boylston Street in Worcester. We are trying to resume a few social events now, and we definitely work on advocacy issues such as monitoring our Massachusetts Commission for the Blind Services and local transportation. For more information, please call Bay State Council of the Blind Central Mass Chapter President Mary Haroyan at 774-232-8036. That's Mary Haroyan at 774-232-8036. Or send an email to mharoyan at charter.net. That's mharoyan at charter.net. We welcome you into our community.
Welcome back. You are listening to the reading of the Worcester Business Journal. It is Wednesday, the 17th of June, 11:31 a.m. Research Bureau, local leadership needed to maximize Opportunity Zone benefits. State and local leaders must help identify strong candidates for Opportunity Zone redevelopment in order for Central Massachusetts to take advantage of the federal program designed to help economically distressed communities, the Worcester Regional Research Bureau said in a report released on Thursday. Central Massachusetts is home to 49 census tracts in 12 communities deemed eligible for Opportunity Zones, including downtown Worcester. WRRB has designed an interactive map to showcase the opportunities to potential investors in those communities. Implemented as part of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017, federal Opportunity Zones are an effort to spur economic growth in high poverty, low-income communities. Developers who reinvest unrealized capital gains into high-impact, long-term projects in the Opportunity Zones can defer taxes on capital gains, receive a basis step-up of previously earned capital gains invested, or get a permanent exclusion of taxable income on new gains. Real estate activity in Worcester zones since the Opportunity Zones were first introduced in 2017 includes the $16.5 million purchase and ongoing $12 million renovation of the Glass Tower at 446 Main Street by Boston-based Synergy Investments, and the July purchase of one of the most prominent undeveloped properties in Worcester Zone for $4.2 million by Ohio-based Industrial Commercial Properties. ICP has yet to announce its intentions for that site. Elsewhere in central Massachusetts, a former Marlboro Bank was converted into a pizza and ice cream restaurant in 2025 with the help of zone-related tax incentives. Of the 49 eligible census tracts, 26 of them are located within the city of Worcester, according to WRRB's map. Fitchburg has 6 eligible tracts, while Gardner has 4. Those zones expire at the end of 2028, with Governor Mara Healey tasked with nominating 103 eligible census tracts from a pool of about 410 eligible tracts across the state by the end of September. These tracts will be in effect from January 2027 through the end of 2036. To qualify as a zone under new and stricter criteria set up by the 2025 One Big Beautiful Bill Act, a census tract must have an individual poverty rate of at least 20% and median income below 125% of the area median income, or a median family income no higher than 70% of the area median. The release of the interactive map was paired with a brief form from WRRB outlining the history of the opportunity zones in Worcester County since 2017 and also examining their effectiveness. The brief from WRRB concluded limited data makes evaluating the economic effectiveness of these zones difficult, but suggests incentives may flow disproportionately toward housing projects in a select number of large metropolitan areas already experiencing measurable economic growth. Still, an opportunity zone designation would provide useful incentives for investors, developers, and municipal leaders considering future projects, WRRB's report said. WRRB found zones have the potential to attract private capital, but there is less evidence that zones lead to broader economic growth felt by local residents. WRRB's report followed a 2019 study of the Worcester zones. Healy has created a webpage outlining the state's process and encouraging developers and municipal officials to offer feedback. In a real estate news, Dudley Ice Cream Shop opens amid heatwave. A new ice cream shop opened this week in a plaza at 185 West Main Street in Dudley. El Reconcito Felice Ice Cream and Antojos began its soft opening on Wednesday, with a planned grand opening scheduled for Saturday. The location was previously home to Ice Cream Farm, which closed after its 2025 season. El Reconcito Felice, located at one of Dudley's central intersections, will serve ice cream as well as manganadas, crepes, and savory food, including burritos, empanadas, and other snacks. El Reconcito Feliz is owned by Hugo Cifuentes, who is also an owner of Cifuentes Landscape Corporation in Dudley, according to filings with the Massachusetts Secretary of the Commonwealth. Now I'm going to return to reading of other 2026 Power 100 participants. First up, we have Jim Humphrey and Will Kelleher IV. Few firms had a greater hand in shaping Worcester's commercial real estate market over the last four decades. Humphrey and Kelleher have advised employers, developers, institutions, nonprofits, and investors on many of the region's most significant transactions while helping to build one of Greater Worcester's premier brokerage firms. Since 2025, they expanded operations into Connecticut, Rhode Island, and New Hampshire, and completed the sale of 67 Millbrook Street and negotiated 85,000 square feet of lease renewals at the Mercantile Center. When asked what unique skills set you apart from others, they responded, "We have always been relationship-driven. Over many years in commercial real estate, we've learned that trust, responsiveness, and long-term partnerships matter far more than the transactions. What one habit should powerful leaders practice? Dedicate part of every day to learning. Markets, industries, and communities are constantly evolving, and effective leaders remain curious. Next up on the 2026 Power 100 is David Masiello. Manufacturing remains a passion for Masiello, whose construction firm has spent decades helping industrial companies expand across central Massachusetts. He is helping the David Clark Company relocate to a new 160,000 square foot Worcester headquarters while completing projects for Exynos, Marmon Utility, Worcester Academy, Tartoni Properties, and Unified 2 Global Packing Group's now 465,000 square foot facility in Westminster. Over a career spanning more than 50 years, Masiello estimates he has helped construct more than 300 buildings and complete more than 1,000 renovations, leaving a lasting imprint on the region's built environment. What unique skill sets you apart from others? My memory and perspective. I've spent a lifetime learning from people who built Central Massachusetts and the industries that shaped it. What is one habit powerful leaders should practice every day? Responsibility to the people around you and your community. Practicing empathy matters. Why do you do business in Central Mass? My family has been building here for more than a century. We are builders by nature. Next on the list is Fred Taylor. Whether advocating for workers, speaking out on major development projects, or leading the Worcester NAACP, Taylor has become one of the most visible and influential voices in Central Massachusetts. Over the last year, he has pushed for greater diversity within the construction trades while continuing efforts to combat the underground economy, which he argues undermines job site safety, fair wages, and responsible development. What unique skills set you apart from others? He responded, "My ability to connect with people from diverse socioeconomic backgrounds. I amplify the voices of the underserved while building strong relationships across the community." What is one habit powerful leaders should practice every day? Gratitude. Recognizing the contribution of others fosters trust, teamwork, and a stronger organization. Why do you do business in Central Massachusetts? I love Worcester, the Commonwealth's heartbeat. Its accessibility and diversity create opportunity, and I believe our best days are still ahead. What are your go-to media outlets? He responded, Urban View, Worcester Business Journal, Unity Radio, Manny J Media, What's Up Worcester, Spectrum News, Telegram and Gazette, Mass Live, and WHDH. Kate Stillman is next on the 2026 Power 100 list. Rural economic development and food security intersect in Stillman's work. After years of navigating bottlenecks in the meat processing industry, she invested nearly $3 million to build an 8,000 square foot U.S. Department of Agriculture inspected smokehouse and value-added meat processing facility. The project expands capacity for hundreds of farms across Massachusetts and New England, creates new jobs, and provides a rare regional resource for farmers seeking to turn locally raised livestock into marketable products. What unique skills set you apart from others? I am extremely hands-on and willing to learn every part of the business, from livestock management and meat processing to regulatory compliance and customer service. What is one habit powerful leaders should practice every day? Patience. Farming, business, and leadership all require the ability to slow down, listen, and think long term. And finally, why do you do business in Central Massachusetts? Hardwick is one of the strongest agriculture communities in the region, and local food strengthens rural economies, protects farmlands, and supports food security. And now it's time for our final break.
Audio Journal, the radio reading service of Central Massachusetts, serving visually and print-impaired listeners since 1987. Audio Journal is a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
Welcome back to the reading of the Worcester Business Journal. New cannabis chair seeks internal improvements, business feedback. The new chairman of Cannabis Control Commission is focused on clearing the air within the agency that has been plagued with internal conflicts. Chris Harding, who Governor Maura Healey tapped to lead the CCC in May, said during a meeting that his priorities for the role include engaging with staff and understanding their focuses as well as the agency's organizational challenges and opportunities. Thanking staff for their engagement, Harding also said he plans to work closely on the organizational design with the Executive Director Travis Ahern, who has had headline-grabbing clashes with former CCC Chair Shannon O'Brien. It is a time of change like this that presents an opportunity to say, are there things we can do differently or better this internally in the agency? But this is critically important because the work, what we do here internally, helps support all the things we do externally, Harding said. So I think we have a real opportunity there. Harding said he also focused on engaging businesses, consumers, patients, and lawmakers. In making recommendations, Harding said he follows the acronym SEETS, S-E-E-T-S, which stands for Safe, Equitable, Efficient, Transparent, and Sustainable. He added that sustainability is a topic he's interested in learning more about within the state's cannabis industry. Cannabis businesses have been struggling to stay afloat amid dropping marijuana prices, and Harding pointing out commissioners had taken up a slew of change of ownership applications during its last meeting. When you start a new industry, you kind of go through some of that irrational exuberance, and it grows on a curve, and then it matures and it settles. Okay, what can we, as an agency, and as we, as regulators, do to help support the sustainability of this for the medium-long term, he said. Commissioner Anthony Wilson, who recently advised cannabis businesses, noted that many in the industry have been concerned and frustrated with the CCC. He also praised CCC staff, saying they are aware of the concerns and have been working on some of the issues internally. I'm confident that the public will see some of these things being addressed in the up-and-coming year and going further, he said. Wilson said he is focused on regulations that support public health and safety as well as the strength of the industry. This includes ensuring safe and well-tested products, keeping marijuana away from minors, and boosting trust among consumers and businesses. Also, Wilson said he wants to address inversion, which is when illegal out-of-state marijuana products enter the legal market. For too long, this business has been treated as if it shouldn't exist, but this is a legal industry in the state of Massachusetts, as approved by more than 60% of voters. I tend to treat it that way, he said. Commissioner C. O'Mara Delabato said she is prioritizing thoughtful and equitable implementation of the framework for cannabis consumption in social settings as well as social equity programs beyond the pre-licensing stages. Also, Lobato said she wants the CCC to be a strong thought partner with cities and towns and communities. A lot of my focus is going to be ensuring that we as an agency believe in walking the walk, that social equity, social justice, responsible regulation, economic growth can and must move forward together in the work that we do, she said. Under the law, commissioners have until this Friday, June 19th, to promulgate regulations for new policies, including raising the cap on the number of licenses cannabis retailers can hold from 3 store licenses to 6. Commissioners adopted a motion Thursday tasking the legal department to present a set of emergency regulations during its next meeting that's scheduled for June 17th. Commissioners also voted to shift license renewal authority from the board to the executive director. Ahern, who pitched the idea, noted that the executive director would report to the board on license renewals, and the CCC can still take up any questions or concerns surrounding the renewal during a meeting. This process took place during the month-long gap where there was no CCC after the previous board dissolved with a new cannabis law and before new commissioners were appointed, Ahern said. He added that some license categories that are less ministerial would remain under the board's authority. Next article, Healey supports rent control compromise, spokesperson says. Governor Maura Healey wants to find a legislative compromise to the rent control ballot question that she opposes, her campaign told the news service. Healey opposes the measure that could go before voters this fall, saying it would hamper housing production. Supporters of the question say it's a response to skyrocketing rents that are setting back tenants already struggling with high living costs. The idea of coming up with a compromise language to avoid a potential vote on statewide rent control question has led to talks, though no agreement has been reached among lawmakers, the competing campaigns, and the industry groups. One possible compromise floated earlier this month by leaders of the pro-rent control campaign proposed legislation allowing cities and towns to decide locally whether to impose limits on rent increases. Under the proposal, municipalities could opt into rent control by a majority vote of their legislative bodies. Annual rent increases would be capped at the lower of 10% or the rate of inflation plus 5%. The framework would have preserved many exemptions contained in the ballot question while also allowing landlords to reset rents to market rates when a tenant moves out and permitting the creation of local rent control boards. When asked whether Healey was backing a legislative compromise which would have to emerge in the legislature, Healey's office referred the news service to her campaign. Her campaign confirmed that she is open to a rent control compromise that avoids the ballot question vote, but did not offer further details. Campaign spokesperson Kerry Lyons said he did not know whether the governor supported local option rent control or whether she was personally involved in talks. The ballot question would repeal Massachusetts' prohibition on rent control statewide. It would impose a cap on annual rent increases at the lower of either the increase in federal consumer price index or 5%. The question carves out exemptions for owner-occupied buildings with 4 or fewer units in newly constructed buildings for 10 years. Question supporters must submit a second round of signatures to local election officials before filing a deadline with the state on July 1st to qualify the question for November ballot. The window is closing on an alternative. And back to the Power 100. Shruti Maraschino. Maraschino's banking career has come a long way since her origins as a teller in her senior year of college. after Marlboro headquartered Digital Federal Credit Union joined forces with First Tech Federal Credit Union on January 1st, she's now tasked with leading the 2 million member firm as it works to combine its operations across coast. DCU is the smaller of the two parties involved in the merger, but having come to DCU after leading Santa Ana-based Orange County's credit union, Maraschino should be well-versed with the California market. DCU is expected to take on First Tech's name and branding, although the timing has yet to be finalized. While the combined firm's future in Marlboro remains to be determined, the credit union was already Central Massachusetts' largest prior to the merger. Regardless of what happens to its local headquarters, it seems the firm will continue to have a visible presence in the region. With 23 branch locations and a May renewal of its long-standing naming rights for Worcester's 14,805 capacity arena and convention center. And one last Power 100, Ed Augustus Jr. Augustus brought one of the most recognizable names in Central Massachusetts public life into banking when he became CEO of UniBank in March. His background as Worcester City Manager, Dean College Chancellor, and the first Secretary of the Mass Executive Office of Housing and Livable Communities gives him unusually broad insight into housing, municipal government, higher education, and regional economic development. What unique skills set you apart from others? Collaboration may be cliche, but it's imperative. I rely on subject matter experts and their experience when working towards organizational goals. And that's all the time we have for today. You have been listening to the Worcester Business Journal, a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or braille, please call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app. Thank you for listening.
Did you know that there are many different ways to listen to Audio Journal? You can go to our website, audiojournal.org, and stream us live. Or you can install the Audio Journal app on your iPhone or iPad. Or you can tell your smart speaker to play radio station Audio Journal on TuneIn. Or you can dial us at 1-712-770-1043 on your telephone. Or you can turn on your local cable access TV station. You can check our website, audiojournal.org, for the correct channel for your town. And finally, you can use one of our special receivers tuned to Audio Journal's frequency. And if you missed your favorite program, go to our website or the Audio Journal app and listen to podcasts of previously aired programs. Now, if you need assistance with any of these listening methods, please contact us at 508-797-1117 or email info@audiojournal.org. Audio Journal is a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
Are you elderly or disabled? Did you know each WRTA fixed route bus has a number of accessibility features such as a ramp to enter, a kneeler which can lower the bus, a securement area for wheelchairs and other mobility devices, priority seating for people with disabilities, electronic signage on the front, side, and rear exterior, a bicycle rack on the front exterior, an interior stop request sign, automated audio and visual stop announcements. Let us make your transportation needs easier and ride the bus with us. Call us with questions at 508-791-9782 or visit our website at www.therta.com.
Are you or a loved one losing your vision? Mass Commission for the Blind can help reclaim your independence with new skills and assistive technologies. partner with Mass Commission for the Blind to develop your vision for the future. If you're blind or visually impaired, find out if you're eligible to register for services to help you achieve your career and life goals. Call 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCD. That's 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB.